This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 47 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we are joined by the Stu Gotts half of the Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gotts. Stu, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. How close were we to having to introduce you today as John Stu Gotts Wiener, program director of WFAN?
We were very close. Thank you for having me. 47th episode. Congratulations. You're almost at 50. I should be on the 50th and the 100th and the 150th and the 200th. Like, I don't like being on episode fucking 47. I got to be honest with you.
All right. Well, let's like a throwaway episode. To get through 47 and okay. Then I'll gladly bring you back on for 50, 100, 150 and all of those.
Okay. Thank you. So to expand on that answer I gave you, which was very close. I was very close. I was very close to taking that position at WFAN. And it's interesting because a lot of people have asked me since, why would you want that position? You've been on air for 20 years, 20 plus years, 20 years with me and Dan coming up this September. And the only answer I can give them, because it's the truth, that coming from me, is the fact that WFAN and being able to run that radio station was a dream destination for me. Now, I always imagined if I went to WFAN, if I went back to New York, I would go back as a host. I never imagined in my wildest dreams that the program director, the person running that station, would be something that was offered to me, that would be an opportunity for me. But I took it really, really seriously because the idea of taking, I love radio. And I know everything shifted to digital and podcasting and all that. And I understand that and I'm rolling with it. But I love radio. I got into this to do live radio. I miss doing live radio. And so for me, to be able to take everything I've learned over 20 plus years in this industry and dump it back into a radio station that meant so much to me growing up and meant so much to me in terms of me wanting to do this for a living was something that was super intriguing to me. And so we were very close. We talked for a good, 3 to 4 weeks about whether or not we can get it done. And obviously at the end, we couldn't get it done for a couple of different reasons, but I was super flattered by it, and it was something I was seriously entertaining.
Did you contact WFAN, or did they contact you?
So I was talking to Olivero about some stuff that had nothing to do with the program director. But when that job came open, I absolutely gave him a call and poked around a little bit, and he was definitely interested. I think, you know, for people who don't know my entire history, I don't expect them to know it. In fact, I was just talking to Boomer Esiason, and he had no idea that I had built a station. He had no idea I was an overnight board op. He had no idea that I took the hard route through radio, okay? And I've done all these jobs, and I built a lineup, and I've done all this. He had no idea, and I think most people really don't know that about me, that I started a radio station in a major market. I was the vice president, general manager, program director of said station, 790 The Ticket in Miami. And I did all that while doing the show with Le Batard. And so, this was something I felt like I would have been good for that station. Olivero agreed. I think people were surprised that I was actually that interested in it. But I kind of like the idea of whatever it is I'm going to do for the remainder of my career, at some point, I want to dump the knowledge that I have about this industry back into a station or some host or some place that I love, because I feel like I have a lot to offer in that regard.
When you were thinking about the job, did you envision making yourself a full-time host at some point in the future at WFAN? Did you envision yourself as somebody who would just kind of like pop in on the shows that are there from time to time? Or did you envision yourself as someone who would just not have a microphone at all there?
It's funny because where the negotiation stalled was me demanding a microphone at my desk. I didn't want to have to go. Like, I didn't want to have to get up and go into, you know, Boomer and Gio in the morning and Stal and Tierney in the middays and Tiki and Evan in the afternoon. So I just said, hey, Olivero, let's do it this way. All right. Just put a microphone at my desk. Okay. Now, listen, that was an early concern for Chris. He would tell you, in all seriousness, whether or not I was going to be okay with not being on the air, or at least not being on nearly as much. And would I be willing to focus on everything that comes with being a program director? Will I deal with sales? Will I sit in the traffic meeting? Well, I recognize that we just ran back-to-back car spots, and you can't do that on WFAN in New York or any radio station for that matter. And I assured him that I would not be wasting his time if I was not going to take those parts of it seriously. And we did talk about a hybrid role, not so much a hybrid role, but, you know, filling in on the big shows when one of the guys were out and perhaps doing some stuff on off to the side on, you know, digitally or some podcasting or stuff like that. But at the end of the day, what Chris Oliveira wanted and what he needed was a program director. And he wanted assurances that I was going to do that. And I was excited to go and do that. And I gave him the assurance that I was going to do those things at least for a year. But I said this to Levitar. When I realized this probably wasn't the gig for me, was at 2 a.m. and I'm on the internet and I am trying to find dirt on every current WFAN host so I could fire them and take their job. I mean, that is the deal. And so those shows, it was interesting. I just wanted to help those shows because, like Sal, for instance, okay? Sal Licata, who has been ripping me nonstop left and right, and I don't really care, okay? I really don't. I went up to Sal and I talked to him when I was at WFAN. What makes that station so special is a guy like Sal Licata, and I'm so happy for him, right? But Sal's the only one who's not in on the joke, okay? He's just not. He doesn't get that I'm joking. Like, he thinks I'm serious. And I'm sorry. You can't wake up every morning just trying to find something to be outraged about. You can't. No one can be that mad at Peter Alonso for anything. I mean, it's ridiculous. But that is what makes that station special. It's what makes it unique. It's guys like Sal and Brandon Tierney and Evan Roberts. Because, like myself, they grew up listening to that radio station. And for them, they are living out a dream, living out a dream. And for me, being the program director, with that station only having two in the station's history, Mark Chernoff and Spike Eskin, I would have been the third. That is hugely flattering to someone like me. And so I wanted to go there and I didn't want to take anyone's job. I mean, it's all in jest, right? And it's all fun. What I wanted to do is take 20 years of what I've learned as being a host, being in sales, being a general manager, and try to help Sal and Brandon have a better show and try to help Evan and Tiki have a better show. Same with Gio and same with Boomer. And so that's all I really wanted to do, because whether they believe it or not, I'm super happy for those guys that they are living out their dreams. I lived out my dreams on ESPN. That's the place I always wanted to be. And I got 8 years of it. And I know how good it felt to me when we were there. And those guys are living out their dreams right now. Boomer Esiason has zero reason to be working right now. And yet he finds himself waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning every morning to go host a show at 6 a.m. Why? Because he grew up on that station and he loves that radio station.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you know Ryan Hurley at all from your time at ESPN?
I do. He's great. He's a great guy. I like him a lot. I figured logically, I was kind of thinking, all right, who's going to be the person who gets it if I don't take this job? And I was happy that it was him. I think he's super smart. I think he's really good. He cares about that station the way I care about that station. And I think you can't have enough people at that station that care about the station that much, because he really does. It's the same with Sal, same with Tierney, same with Evan Roberts, same with Boomer, same with Gio and me. That's what makes that station great. These are fans who grew up listening to that station who are now getting to host on that station. And so I am happy for Ryan Hurley. I am. I hope he got a microphone at his desk. I do. He's a good guy, and he's going to be great for that station. And here's the main reason why he'll be great for that station. You don't need to do much. That station, there are very few markets in the country where sports radio is alive and well. And New York is one of them. Chicago, another. Philadelphia is another. Okay. But you don't really need to tweak much with that station.
Right.
Like, we just had a Nick collapse for all time on Wednesday night. And all you have to do, and I was making the joke on the show, that, listen, if you're a host on FAN, let the callers do the work for you. That was a day where you just turn on the microphones, you give a short little monologue, and you let Sal from Brooklyn call in until his heart's delight. Let him rip anyone, you know, let him rip anyone he wants to rip. But Ryan Hurley is going to be great, because Ryan Hurley has no on-air aspirations. He wants to help those guys get better at what it is they do.
Yeah. I think of Mark Chernoff as more of a clock manager and a person who knew how to maximize Nielsen ratings. And then Spike Eskin is more of a creative person, and that's part of why he's back on air. Mm-hmm. But when he was there, like I envision him helping to craft bits and create fake feuds with Evan Roberts and things like that. Did both sides of that job appeal to you? Did what, you know, the way that Chernoff kind of thought of the program director role, and the way that Spike Eskin used the program director role, like, was it enough of a creative outlet in your opinion?
I think so. Yeah, I do. Chernoff's a legend. And so both sides of that, kind of the creative side and just being a part of the show that I've been a part of for 20 years and learning not to take myself so seriously, and just all the fun and laughter that we have doing that show on a daily basis. I think if FAN needs anything, it needs a little bit of that. Like, not taking ourselves so seriously, not finding a thing to be outraged about every single day. And so, yeah, helping those guys not take themselves as seriously as they do take themselves, and they do. And I don't care what any one of them says, they take themselves very, very seriously. Why? We're talking about sports. I mean, there are guys in the car, I've said this a million times, who know far more about sports than the show and the host that they're listening to. They do. That's okay. That's okay. Your job is not to be the guy who knows the most about sports. Your job is to be the guy that entertains. And so WFAN for so long, it was, we know sports, we know sports, we know sports. And then Carton came along and he loosened it up a little bit. And I love that Craig Carton did that. And then Gio came in for Carton, and Gio kind of kept that going. And so I think if FAN needs anything, they need a little bit of fun. They need to laugh a little bit. They need to not take themselves so seriously. And so, yeah, I think there was plenty there to satiate me in terms of the creativity part. And in terms of, you know, PPM and Arbitron and Nielsen now and the rating system. Right. Yeah, that stuff. Listen, I was a general manager. And so that stuff means a lot to me, too. All of it does, including sales. I could have helped in sales. I would have helped in sales just through my 20 years of relationships and being a GM and a vice president in a major market. So all of it was, there would have been enough there. All of it was appealing to me, all of it, even dealing with traffic, even sitting in a sales meeting. Because again, I got into this for sports radio, and I haven't been on radio or around a radio station in 3 years, and I miss radio. It's that simple.
Did you talk to Spike Eskin about the job?
I did. Spike, listen, his job was to, you know, kind of walk me through a day of what it's like to be the WF, and a week really, to be the WFAN program director. I told Boomer this. I told Gio this. Spike's job was to sell me on taking the job. And when I hung up with Spike, I wanted nothing to do with the job. I mean, Spike, he was stuck in the Holland Tunnel. He was dealing with traffic. He seemed stressed out. It was like he was just ran a marathon. He was out of breath. I'm like, Spike, this doesn't sound fun at all. And he's like, oh, go to the WIP in the afternoons. But Spike was great. He was super helpful. And really laid out for me what it would be like to be the program director at WFAN. And I kind of knew it without Spike having to tell me. But Spike, in all seriousness, he was great, except for the part where he got me to walk away from taking the job.
Well, and I'm sure Spike at that point, he had been kind of had his sights set back on Philly for, I don't know, 5 months now or whatever it was since he started talking to WIP about going back there. So like there had to have been at least some aspect of him that just kind of like still felt stuck at FAN. Like he wanted to get back to hosting, but was still having to do the program director job. And it was almost holding him back from doing that for a bit.
I could feel Spike be like, as it kind of drew on and like it was going on for a while, I could feel without speaking to Spike, I could feel his anger. Like, hey dude, make a fucking decision so I can get to Philadelphia already. Let's go. You know, I could feel it, you know?
What were you talking to Olivero about before the program director job opened up?
That's a good question. We were just talking about opportunities. You know, I did 2 days with Gio last summer, and that's as much fun as I've had. Listen, I love the show that we do, but again, I miss radio. So that was really fun for me to be able to do that with Gio. We had a blast. He and I have become really good friends. He's a great dude. He's a great host. But we were talking about, you know, doing fill-in stuff and perhaps, you know, is there a partnership with a digital show with myself and our company and WFAN. We were just talking about some on-air opportunities, me having no idea that the program director's job would eventually come open. So we were talking about some of those opportunities. And again, as I said to Boomer and Gio when I went on the show with them, and I've told Dan, my hopes is that he and I will continue to talk. If the worst thing that came from this is I found a friend in Chris Olivero. He is great. He is smart. He is loyal to his staff, both on-air and off-air. He and I really hit it off. We had great conversations about a lot of different things. And my hope is that one day down the road, we'll be able to figure something out. I don't know what that thing is yet. He and I are still exploring, but hopefully we'll get there someday. Because for me, however long I have left doing any of this stuff, and I don't know how long it's going to be, the perfect ending for me, everyone has their different dream ending, but me sticking the landing is by doing something with WFAN, preferably in an on-air role, but that's the way I'd like to wrap it up whenever it is I decide to wrap it up.
So is the dream ending a full-time on-air position at some point at FAN?
Yeah, to be honest with you, like I'm 50. I've been doing this 20 years. I'm not going to mince my words. The dream ending for me, growing up listening to Mike and the Mad Dog, to be able to have the afternoon slot, and I'm not sitting here saying I'm not lobbying for anyone's job. Sure. I was about to take the job as program director before Evan Roberts and T.K. Barber get upset at me. I'm not trying to take your job, okay? But yes, afternoons for me only because, so when I think back to myself as a kid listening to that station, that's the show I listened to the most. It was Mike and Chris. Yeah. I was in school during the middays. IMIS was on in the mornings. I wasn't listening to IMIS. I was 17 years old, 60, whatever it was. But the show I listened to, and man, did I make sure I was there every single day, was Mike and Chris 1 o'clock. And so for me, to leave New York, come down to Florida, have the success that I've had with Dan, have an 8-year run at ESPN, this amazing deal with DraftKings, start our own company. I've made more money than I could ever imagine. I've done just about everything I wanted to do in this industry. Things I never dreamed of doing, being on First Take, being on College Game Day, calling a women's Final Four, college lacrosse, all stuff I never dreamed of doing. The one thing I haven't done, host afternoons at WFAN. So that would be the dream ending for me.
At what point during the process did you let Dan know you were talking to FAN?
It's a great question. What made this easier, and I've learned from conversations with people in the past, the worst thing you can do, especially when you have a partner of 20 years, is let him hear about stuff from someone else other than you.
Yeah.
I've grown up a lot working with Dan because I've made that mistake before. So I told Dan, I kept him abreast of everything as it was happening. I did not want him hearing anything from anyone else. And I told him, if you hear anything from anyone else, it's a lie because I am telling you what's happening as it's actually happening. But that's the way you do it. It's the way Dan would treat me, and it's the way I'm treating Dan because, listen, we've had great success together. It's one of the biggest shows in the history of sports radio. We're super proud of it. And Dan and I have had that conversation before where it's like both of us to each other,
Yeah.
Hey, don't let me hear about something from someone else. Let me hear about it from you. That's the way to do it.
Does he understand what FAN means to you? Like, does he understand how important it is?
Oh, Dan was super supportive. He was great. He knows how much that station means to me. He knows how much that position means to me. He knows how great I would be at that position because at one point I was Dan's boss.
Right.
I hired Dan to do radio. In fact, I told Dan I'm not starting this radio station unless you're doing afternoon drives. Otherwise, I didn't see the point. He was super supportive. He knows that station means a lot to me. He did say to me at one point, if you went back to New York, didn't you always imagine you would go back as a host? To which I said, yes. But being the program director is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
And because it was that station, if I called him, it's a WEI or WI, it wouldn't make sense to him. But WFAN in New York, given how much we've talked about it on our show, and I feel like I've introduced Dan to Mike and the Mad Dog, to WFAN, to the way that station is, he totally understood. He was good with it. In fact, I'll tell you, Dan put in a good word for me. It was almost like he gave me his blessing. Whatever he and Olivero spoke about, Dan was really good about it.
Yeah, no, that's cool to have that relationship for sure.
Yes.
Was there ever any talk about doing both programming FAN and still at least contributing to Le Batard's show in a way?
So, yeah, no, there were conversations about that.
Did that seem feasible?
Not doing the Le Batard show and being the program director. Because, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, Chris Olivero, and rightfully so, wanted a program director. So was he open to the PD being on air? Because I told you we were working on some things off to the side to kind of satiate my desire to be on air.
Yeah.
Whether it was filling in for Gio when he's out or Boomer when he's out or any of the guys when they were out. But we certainly, we had conversations about how we could kind of merge the two. But Chris Olivero is a radio vet, man. He likes his, 4-hour shows, two guys in a booth. The program director is the program director, but we did have those discussions. I think had we got it done, the one thing I would have continued to do was God Bless Football. I think I would have had to completely remove myself from the show I do with Dan.
Yeah.
That show, we tape it pretty early in the morning. I'm exhausted afterwards. There's no way I could focus on, and I keep going to this analogy just because it's funny. Like, what happens if back-to-back car spots run during a commercial break? And I'm going to be so tired that when sales calls, I'm going to tear someone's head off. And so there was no way I could do the show, the main show, and be the program director. But we did have conversations about me being the program director and doing some stuff that was maybe one or two times a week for an hour or 2 hours per week.
But nothing like that you could still do Dan's show even just once a week or something like that?
No, he was a little bit uncomfortable with just allowing me to do 1 or 2 hours a week of God Bless Football. He knows the preparation that goes, even though I don't give it off, but he knows the preparation that goes into something like that. He knows how exhausting it could be, even just doing an hour or two a day or an hour or two a week. And again, going back, Chris really honed in on whether or not Stugatz wanted to be a program director and if that was enough for him. And quite frankly, it was enough for me, so much so that I was seriously considering for the first time leaving our show to go be the program director at WFAN. He wanted a PD. Maybe it would have morphed into something more on air as time went on. But he wanted me to be the program director. And he didn't really want me dabbling in on-air stuff unless it was for WFAN.
Yeah, no, and I think even knowing your background, that was the question that when this stuff kind of came out that everybody had. I mean, I know you used to be an executive, but that was a long time ago. And after you had a couple of decades of being on air and being the focal point of a show and having your own shows and stuff like that, like is behind the scenes enough? Definitely is. I get the love for WFAN, but still that.
It would have been a hard transition. I got to be honest. I told Chris this. I'm not certain. I couldn't guarantee him this. And this is not the reason it didn't happen. He and I we just talked, right? We just kept having great conversations. I couldn't guarantee myself or him that 3 months after I made that decision, I would have regretted that decision. I could guarantee it. I didn't know. Like, you're right. Like, 20 years, I'm 20 years removed from doing any of that stuff. But I do miss it. So I couldn't really guarantee myself. I couldn't guarantee him, hey, I might call you in a month, 3 months, 6 months and tell you, oh my God, I made the worst decision, professional decision of my life. I can't guarantee it. I don't know. And I still don't know. I would have liked to think there was enough there to kind of keep me occupied. And that's a big position. In terms of program director, there is a gravitas that comes with. So it would have satisfied my ego.
Yeah, for sure.
That's kind of what you're asking. It definitely would have satisfied my ego being in charge of that place. But the on-air is important to me. I enjoy it. I love doing it. And as I said to Dan on air, I have a great life down here in Florida. You know, I really do. My wife, she loves our life down here. We have a great life. I wouldn't call what I'm doing work. I would call being the program director at WFAN. Not only is it work, it's hard fucking work. And so that they're all fair. Like, Gio called me one day and goes, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, Boomer's going to want you here at 5 a.m. And I'm not coming at 5 a.m. Get the hell out of here. And he was like, Stugazza, are you sure you want to do this? And a lot of people ask me that along the way. And the truth is, I'm not sure. I don't know how it would have worked out. But that was also part of the, you know, that was part of the excitement for me.
Yep.
Like, can I do this? I knew I could do it. Am I going to be willing to do this? Will I be good at it? Will I get tired of it in 6 months? I don't have those answers. But I can tell you, I was searching for those answers. And it's part of the reason I was excited about doing it. Like, can you go from working 15-hour days to 3-hour days and then back to 15-hour days where you're stuck listening? Because when you're the PD, you have no idea when the phone's going to ring. My phone doesn't ring on Saturday or Sunday. It doesn't ring on Friday because I'm usually done on Thursdays and I'm off doing whatever it is I did. But when you're the PD at WFAN, you're cruising along on a Saturday, you're hanging out with your kids, and all of a sudden the phone calls and something happened on the Yankees broadcast. And then all of a sudden your day's ruined, your weekend's ruined. I don't know. Like, the unknown, the not knowing was the part that made me excited.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Were you more of a Francesa fan or Russo fan back in the Mike and the Mad Dog days?
Oh, God, that's such a good question. Chemistry is so hard to come by in this industry. It's like, and I say, once you have it, you latch onto it with everything you have, right? Those guys were so good together.
Yeah.
Their voices work together. Their cadences work together. They talk sports the way me and my friends talk sports. They weren't former athletes. They weren't jocks. They were two New York sports fans talking about games and talking about potential moves and trades the way me and my friend Mikey T would talk about it, or my friend Mark or Rob Hazen. Like, they talked about sports the way we did. So when you ask me, did I like one over the other? I would say my personality skews more towards Russo.
For sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I've kind of patterned what it is I do on air after Chris Russo, because I just, my personality is more Russo than it is Francesa. And I would say, you know, Dan probably skews more to the Francesa side of things, right? Yep. Dan would hate me saying that. in fact, that should be the headline.
Yeah, so just not politically.
Right. Exactly right. So I would say, I like them together. What I didn't like is when they split up. And I've told Chris this and I've told Mike this. Like, they're not as good apart as they were together. And I suspect people will say the same thing about me and Dan if we ever split up. You guys were better together. And they're right. It will never get better for me professionally on air than it's been with Dan. Like, and especially at the height of me and Dan. It will never get that good again. So I just like them together. I'm not really answering your question. I'm kind of rambling. But if I had to choose one, I'd go with Russo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm similar there. And I think part of it is also just that, like, people in general don't love change. So when there's something that they like Mike and the Mad Dog, once they split, like, even if one of them was technically better on their own than when they were together,
sure.
It would be impossible for the Mike and the Mad Dog fans to ever actually see that, just because, everybody, you know, once they get used to something, people like what they like. And I think it's similar. It would be similar with you and Dan. Like everybody likes you and Dan together. If you split up, that's not to say that you wouldn't both be able to be successful on your own.
Right.
But just, it would be hard for people to adjust to that.
Our fan base would be devastated. They would be. Listen, if I miss a day, they freak out. If Dan misses a day, they freak out. If Mike Ryan misses a day, he's a big part of our ecosystem in there. And a big reason as to why we have such great chemistry. If you take one of the pieces out, Billy, Chris, the show's not the same. It's just not the same. And yes, would Dan and I be successful doing our separate things? Yes. But we both know it would never feel good, as good, or be as good as me and Dan at the height of our powers. So that doesn't mean we're not going to go out and, you know, one day seek some things that both of us want to do on our own one day. I don't know when that day is going to come. It almost came. But Dan and I are well aware of how our audience would receive us splitting up. And we are also well aware that it will never be this good again, ever. It doesn't matter what we do. We'll never be this good again.
What do you think of Russo with Stephen A. Smith on First Take?
I love it. I love it. Because you know what's happening here? So Russo, I mean, he's having, you know, I guess a renaissance, right? Like it's amazing. What I love so much about Russo on First Take with Stephen A. is Chris Russo felt like my little secret. He felt like New York's little secret.
Yeah.
I've been talking about Chris Russo on our show for years. Like a little secret, this crazy guy, New York, WFAN. There was no streaming back then. He was ours, right? He was our guy. And now, and we would talk about him in such glowing terms and how great he is. And everyone was confounded. No one understood what it is I was talking about when I was talking about Chris Russo, especially the guys on our show. They're all from Miami. They didn't listen to WFAN. They had no idea who this character was. And then he appears on First Take. And all of a sudden, this little secret, this thing that was just mine, was being shared with the rest of the country and the rest of the world. And everyone loves him.
Yeah.
And I am so happy for that, because if you have gotten to know Chris Russo, he is impossible not to like. It is impossible not to like Chris Russo. And so I am happy for him, because I think he needed this. I think he wanted this. It's been a great jolt for him. He tells us all the time he's getting guests he never got before. He's got a gravitas that he hasn't had since Mike and the Mad Dog. And I am telling you this. This is not Chris Russo's words. I love it mostly because, you know, somewhere out of Long Island, Francesa is steaming mad right now because Russo is doing just fine without Mike. How about that?
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. Like, I always been a big Chris Russo fan. And like, then when he went to First Take, I didn't think it was going to work, because I didn't think he was going to resonate with the, and obviously he does a national radio show on SiriusXM, but that's very different than ESPN's daytime audience. And I didn't know if it was going to work, if it was going to resonate. And like, there were times that early on where it seemed like JJ Redick and Ryan Clark and some of them didn't really enjoy working with him, and some of the audience was complaining, and I was always just kind of like, no, you don't understand. Like this is who he is. Like this isn't just shtick. Like this is his actual personality. And I think it's been fun to watch that, watch him kind of grow on First Take, and watch the people that he works with on First Take also kind of like start to come to accept who he is, and be just kind of comfortable letting him go off. And
credit to Stephen A. for allowing it. Yeah, because you're right. The younger people were like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
Why are you allowing him on this program that I love so much? JJ Redick is a great example of that. We have JJ on our show all the time. if you've never heard of Chris Russo, if you never listened to his work, and the first time you're meeting him is co-hosting with him on First Take, it's jarring. Okay. Yeah. It's going to be a shock to your system. So I actually understand what JJ Redick is saying when he says that, because Chris Russo is the guy who's going to summon up, you know, Bill Guerin after the Knicks have a collapse in game five of the first round of the NBA playoffs. He's going to be the guy who goes back to the one Knick team that won an NBA championship, and he's going to cite all those guys and how much better they were, and they had more guts, and they didn't complain about the calls, and they didn't do this, they did that. And if you're JJ Redick and you're hearing that for the first time on air, that's going to be jarring to you.
Yeah.
Like, it just is, you know? But I think JJ plays along very well with it.
Yeah, he does a much better job of it now than maybe the first couple of times that they work together.
But Brandon, you know this. Just let Russo be Russo. Just let him fly. Yeah. Just let him go. He'll stick the landing, and then you can laugh at him. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it? You've been with Dan now for is it 20 years?
So it's going to be 20 years this September. In fact, when I talked about some, yeah, it's going to be 20 years this September. Go ahead.
So then you've been working with Dan longer than Mike and the Mad Dog work together. Like, does it feel like it's been that long?
It feels like 40. Yes, it feels that long. It's 20 years. We're super proud of it. In fact, when I talked about some of the reasons I didn't take the program director job, 20 years is coming up this September. And it's important for me to reach 20 years. That's not the norm in our industry.
Yeah.
I don't think Mike and Mike lasted 20 years.
No.
Greeny and Golic. I think it was just short of 20 years. I could be wrong on that. I know Mike and Chris did not. And I knew it was coming up. And so just reaching that 20-year plateau was something that was super important to me. And I know how important it is to Dan. We have some things planned for that 20th year, things we're excited about. And we just consider ourselves fortunate, man. This ain't work. It has never, ever felt like work to me. I wake up. I go, well, the drive feels like work, but I wake up, I drive into the studio, I sit around, we talk about sports, I laugh with my friends, they become family at this point. And I go home and I'm playing golf by 2:30, 3 o'clock, except when I have to do this podcast. So, I mean, it's never, it doesn't feel like work. We're fortunate, and it was important for me and for Dan, both of us, to get to 20 years. And so we're right there, man. We're a couple of months away. But yeah, it's flown by. You know what I hate, Brandon? I hate that people like, so now I'm greeted with, oh, the legend. And now people are asking me they're asking me to kind of rewind and take them through my career. I hate that because that means the end is coming. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
But it's not anytime soon. I can tell you that. I can't speak for our show. I think Dan and I would like to do it for as long as possible. I'm just saying, like, the end for me, I'm not going to do this into my 60s, dude. Are you out of your mind? Like, get the hell. I am not going to be sitting around somewhere doing a podcast like Francesa when I'm 63 years old. Why am I taking so many shots at Francesa?
It is amazing. I mean, maybe he's getting paid a ton of money to do it, but, like, you do wonder, like, he doesn't need to do it. I would imagine the podcast is not nearly as fulfilling as for Francesa, you know, the daily 30-minute podcast that he puts out is not nearly as fulfilling as being on live radio was.
You can't replicate it, man.
Yeah.
You can't. No, you can't. That, it's when I keep telling you I miss radio, Brandon, what I miss is the high wire act of doing live radio. Like knowing you're right on the edge and hoping that you don't go over it. I like performing in front of a live audience. So I can tell you from firsthand experience that there is no way to recreate doing live radio. Podcasting just isn't the same. I enjoy doing it. There are benefits to doing a podcast, but I would imagine, and I have not spoken to him about it, but the reason Mike is doing that is twofold. One, to keep his voice out there. And I think the podcast is doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Number one is, to keep his voice. And number two is he built a big enough brand over a long period of time where Mike could make easy money just doing a half hour to 45 minutes a day.
Yep.
And a lot of money. That's where we're at, right? In 2024 with media and especially sports media. It's, you know, do you have a brand? Do you have an audience that's big enough where you can go out on your own and do your own thing and control your own destiny and your own fate? And Mike is one of those guys who can, even into his 60s, and make some good money. But that's kind of where we're at. Like, listen, I'm certain, you know, I've thought about it. Dan, I'm certain. me and Dan could split up and go do our own thing and make a pile of cash until we're 80 years old doing this goddamn thing. It's ridiculous. And that's only because of the hard work put in on the front end of building up a loyal audience over the last 20, 25 years. So.
Are you at all getting bored of working with Dan?
No. No, because I think, you know, with Dan, Dan's a perfectionist, man. So Dan, when we left ESPN and we did our deal with DraftKings, I viewed it almost as like a celebration. Like, here we are, man. We were able to leave ESPN and start our own thing. Dan was viewing it as a new beginning, and credit to Dan, because he is constantly pushing the envelope. So Dan doesn't allow it to be boring. Every day feels like the first day with Dan, you know? He wants everything to be perfect. He wants everything to be right. He knows, as we've gotten older, it can't all be perfect. It's not always going to be right. We'll sink into it. We'll have fun if we get it wrong. But no, Dan is always pushing forward. And because of that, his work ethic, his vision, I haven't gotten bored, because he won't allow us to get bored. He keeps us on our toes. And so I'm grateful for that, oddly. I wish he would get bored. I want to get bored with him. I want to get old with him. I told him the final shows I want to do are me and him, just me and him, on two rocking chairs outside a cabin overlooking the lake drinking beers. That's what I want to do with Levitard. He'll never do that, by the way.
Do you like the Howard Stern-like sized cast of contributors that the show has, or would you prefer a more compact show cast?
It's a great question. I do like it, because one of the things for me and Dan over the course of time, and I'm certain you've noticed covering our show and listening to our show, is how do we stay young? How do we stay young? How do we stay relevant? Dan is outside the demographic of 25 to 54. Sorry, I just gave away his age. I am just inside of it at 50, 51 years old. We need young people around us. We do. Because the media landscape is changing. Social media is changing. Dan and I aren't on social media nearly as much as Jess is, or Lucy is, or Mike Ryan is, or Jeremy Taché is, or any of the guys on our show. And so Dan and I, even go back to ESPN, it was always important for us, whether it was Mina, whether it was Pablo, Dominique Foxworth, Amin El Hassan, we always wanted people around us that would help us be better, that would help us stay young, and that would help us stay relevant. And so, no, I love having all the people around. I think, you know, I'm old school, so it's funny. I think the same cast makes for better chemistry every day. But I'm okay with that, because part of what we're doing and part of what this company is and part of whatever end game that Dan and I have, at least for me, it's passing this forward to the people that helped us build this and creating opportunities for others. And I think that's kind of what we're doing with all the new people and with some of the people who have been around the show. You know, Mike is talking more than ever. Billy's talking more than ever. He's co-hosting God Bless Football with me. That's what I wanted for our staff, because they've helped create this amazing character that has been hugely profitable for me for so many years. And I'd like to help repay that to them. And so it's kind of like what I was telling you with WFAN. I think my printer just went off. I'm sorry about that. Dumping all my knowledge back into a station that I love. In this case, with our show, with where it's at now, it's taking what I know and dumping it back into people that I love and who have helped me arrive where I've arrived.
I know you had said that you told Dan that you weren't going to start the radio station unless he was the afternoon host for you. Was it hard to convince him to become a sports radio host?
No. Dan loves an underdog. We were an underdog. We were a startup radio station going up against a heritage station in 560 WQAM. I worked at QAM. I sat there saying to myself, because, you know, every market started popping up, or major markets, more than one sports radio station. So when I was working there, it was old. It was Hank Goldberg. It was Jim Mandich. Great guys, great host. But it was old. I was like, there has to be a younger alternative here in Miami, a more hipper, younger alternative in Miami. So when I was producing Hank Goldberg's show as the executive producer of his show, he had spent like a good year, and it was like one of his last years, just tearing Levitard apart on a daily basis. Anything he wrote, even if Hank agreed with him, he would find a way to disagree. And I said, if anyone could drive Hank Goldberg this crazy, that person needs to be on the air opposite of Hank Goldberg. And so I called Dan as I was putting this thing together, and I told him I was starting a station. And I said, I want you in afternoon drives. Otherwise, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. And so Dan was, he was intrigued by it. Obviously, he took the job. He loved going against Hank. And Dan loves being a part of an underdog. Like, he loves being a part of something like that. And we were the underdog. You had the GM calling, you know, saying we were doing sissy boy radio. And then, you know, a year and a half later, we had higher ratings than any show in the history of the market. And so, and we enjoyed that. We took a great amount of pride in that. He did call me a week before the station started. I was doing middays and he was going to be doing afternoons. And he said, I can't do the show by myself. And I said, well, who do you want me to get? And he told me Boog Sciambi. Now, Boog, who's the voice of the Cubs now, he was doing a talk show, or he was doing work for the Marlins, who are on 560. So he could not come over to 790 the ticket. So I said, all right, well, I'll call Boog. He said, I already spoke to Boog. He can't do it. But Boog suggested I do it with you. And I said, well, I'm doing middays. He said, well, not anymore. You're doing the afternoons with me unless you want me to not take the job. And so, you know, I had to hire a new midday show because, again, I wasn't starting the station without Dan. If that meant I have to sit in with Dan, then I had to sit in with Dan. Now, it is in hindsight, at the time, I was upset because, Brandon, I'm telling you, I wanted my own midday show, okay? So I was upset at the time, but it turns out to be the greatest call I've ever gotten. I mean, I'm sitting here 20 years later. I'm talking to you. They're offering me WFAN program director jobs. Like, it was the best call I ever got, and it's been as fun a 20 years as anyone could imagine.
How was the chemistry like early on?
It sucked. It was terrible. The show was awful. It was just so bad. It was so bad. I didn't know Dan. Yeah. Like, we had mutual friends, but I didn't know him. And so I found myself, I was driving the show because I'm the only one who had radio experience. And I was interviewing Dan for 3 hours every day. And Dan will tell you, we tried to play back the first episode of our show years ago. Dan couldn't sit through the first segment. That's how bad it was. Now we're going to try to do that on our 20th anniversary. Spoiler alert. We're going to try to get to force Dan, tie him down and make him listen to the entire thing. It was bad. I knew it was bad. He knew it was bad. He'll tell stories of him driving around on his bicycle throughout his neighborhood in the middle of the night because Dan doesn't like walking away from something that felt as bad as that did. I don't care. I go home. I go to sleep. I'm fine. Not Levitard. He's a perfectionist. And so finally, we had a conversation after we got started. Two big things happened. One, we hired Mark Hochman, who was Dan's best friend, to be our executive producer. And a big reason as to why we've had the success that we've had. That was number one. Number two, we sat down with Boog, and Boog said, listen, you guys are doing it backwards. It's the Dan Levitard show with Stu Gatz. It's the first voice I need to hear every segment every day is Dan Levitard. That way, Stu is not guessing what Dan wants to talk about. Dan is just talking about what he wants to talk about, and I'll have to dance around it. And so, you know, it took us a year or two, but eventually we found our way. The thing that we were afforded that not all shows are afforded was time. You need time. Chemistry comes with, you know, it takes time. And so we were afforded time, mostly because I was the boss.
How
I'm not going to fire myself.
Yeah, right. No, and that's definitely a benefit that a lot of shows, I mean, we've even seen that on WFAN where shows don't have instant ratings. And then Mike Francesa comes back 3 months later and bumps them out of afternoon drive.
Right.
How important was the 8 years at ESPN to developing the following that the show has today?
Oh, huge. Yeah, it was, you know, it was funny when we were making that decision as to whether or not we should go to ESPN, because Dan loved being, all Dan ever cared about was being relevant in Miami. That's it. He just wanted to be relevant in this market. We achieved that. Mike has been so great in terms of following the industry and seeing where the industry is headed. And Mike, to his credit, told us a long time ago where we're at today. He told us a long time ago, this is where you're going to be at in 2024. Building an audience is important. And we didn't think we could build. And what we noticed with our show, because, you know, our show is repurposed as a podcast.
Yeah.
But even doing it in Miami, we noticed when we looked at the numbers, the downloads were coming from all over the place. They were coming from everywhere because our show always felt like a national show. we were a local show, but we would get, because Dan was working for ESPN.
Right.
So we would get the Chris Mortensen, and we would get the big guest, and we would get all the people you would want to hear from. Dan was happy being relevant and big in our market. Mike and I told them what it would do for us in terms of gaining audience, just being on ESPN, being on those platforms, ESPN Radio, and then on TV on ESPNU. I would say the audience, our audience was big when we got there. It increased exponentially during the 8 years we were there and really allowed us to be able to sustain ourselves, to be able to become an economy. And so it's as successful and as a good a decision as we've made in the 20 years of doing this. Those 8 years there were incredible.
Yeah, the show's podcast audience was huge, even when you guys were on terrestrial radio, which is crazy because, like you said, it was just, it's not like the show wasn't offering anything exclusive as a podcast. It was just the repurposed radio show.
Yeah.
Did that podcast audience, did it grow by design or was it just organic?
No, you know, I think we started kind of programming it more to, even while on radio, on live radio, programming the show more to podcasting and digital with the leadership of Mike, because he knew it was going there. We all kind of knew that's where this thing was headed. But our shows became, I mean, they always were, but to an extent, like really like episodic. We would kind of pick up the next day from where we left off the day before. All that was done by design, no question about it. We realized that building, so it's funny you mentioned that the podcast audience, which just we were repurposing a show that we had already done, but we were doing it from 10 to 1 Eastern time. And so a lot of people are working at that time. So our fans who were accustomed to having us on in the afternoons didn't get to hear what we were doing from 10 to 1, but they did with the podcast. And so we realized that's the future. Oh my God, that's the future. People are going to listen on their time, when they want, how they want. And so, yeah, we absolutely started programming our show towards a digital podcast world. Yes.
Yeah. And that's the benefit of having a show that isn't just taking sports phone calls all day, because if you were just taking calls all day, then there's not really an incentive to listen to your show versus the next show that's on taking calls, talking about something that's maybe more current. But people were going to listen to the personalities on the show more so than the topics that were being discussed.
We made the show about if you're going to do topic of the day, you're not going to have a good podcast. You can't, you're right. Like you can't take, now I miss the calls dearly. Trust me. I miss the calls. Like on a day, you know, after the Knicks have a collapse, all I want to do is take calls and let the callers do the work for me. I miss that so much. Okay. But you're right. You cannot have a successful podcast sitting there taking phone calls and talking about the three big topics of the day. The show shifted and really became about us and the personalities and our lives. So if you didn't listen for a week because life got in the way, when you started listening again, you didn't miss a beat. You picked up right where you left off. And that's kind of what we were going for. We definitely made the show more about us and more about mocking sports and sports media than about the topics of the day. Now, occasionally you have to do a topic of the day, but if you're doing that every day, you're not going to have a good podcast.
Was the decision to leave ESPN, was that mostly Dan's decision or were you part of those conversations?
Good, very good question, Brandon. Was that Dan's? No, it was Dan's decision. I mean, when they let Chris Cody go, anyone who knows Dan, Greg is his best friend. I mean, it's certainly not me. Greg Cody is his best friend. That's why he's on every Tuesday. Why else would we put that lunatic on? I'm joking. I love him. We love him. Our audience loves him. He fits our show perfectly. I want to say Dan might be the godfather of Chris Cody. I'm not 100% sure on that. Okay. But I know they're very close.
Yeah.
So when they let Chris Cody go, ESPN did. I think everyone on our show had an idea what was coming next. So whether or not I spoke to him, doesn't really matter. I kind of knew, saw where it was going. And so, yeah, that decision mostly came from Levitore.
And were you comfortable with that decision? Did you have faith in the decision to leave a brand as big as ESPN?
There was an excitement of not knowing what was on the other side. But I was nervous. Like, I really enjoyed being at ESPN. I've talked about this with Dan. Like, I really enjoyed being there. For me, when I got into the business, it was WFAN or ESPN. Like, that was the goal for me. And I got to ESPN. We got to ESPN. We got there together. And I'm not an idiot. I don't get there without Dan. So, yeah. And I realized that. I would have liked, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I could have stayed at ESPN for the rest of my life. So I was nervous, and I felt like I was growing at ESPN, and some good things were happening. So I was nervous only because I wasn't armed with the information that Dan was armed with. So I was definitely nervous. But the nervousness and the not knowing what was next, kind of, once I got past not being at ESPN, you know, it got me excited. Like, okay, what's going to be next? Dan wouldn't do this unless, you know, we had a plan and all that. I would have liked to have been more involved in those conversations. I wasn't, but we've moved on, you know?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Did you consider leaving the show at all at that point? Or did you use it as leverage at all? Because the decision to leave ESPN is a big one. If he left ESPN and then you left the show at the same time, I think that would have been a pretty big hit to the show. So like, did you
arm with hindsight, Brandon, I should have leveraged the fucking hell out of him.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think you definitely could have.
I didn't though. I went into it, I could have leveraged the hell out of them. I know I could have. Dan and I have been partners for 20 years. Dan is not an irresponsible person.
Yeah.
So I had to figure that whatever was going to be next was going to be great, was going to be fun, was going to give us the freedom that I think we both kind of craved and coveted. But I did not leverage. I'll tell you what, I don't think I told my agent to make a single call to anybody. I wasn't ready to leave the show. Definitely wasn't ready to leave the show. And I knew because I saw the podcast numbers that we were going to have a lot of suitors. So,
yeah,
but you have to realize, Brandon, because you have stumbled upon an interesting thing here. You're exchanging relevancy for money, essentially, and freedom is what you're doing. I miss that relevancy. I miss the relevancy of being on ESPN. And anyone who says otherwise is lying. They're lying through their teeth, okay? I look at Pat McAfee on in every single airport TV in America, and I get insanely jealous. I do. I'm happy for Pat. Pat's doing it his way. People should stop giving him a hard time. He gets all the big guests on. And so what if he doesn't ask the questions you want him to ask? Go get your own show. And get the guest and ask them the questions you want to ask. Like, who are you to determine what journalism is in 2024? Journalism is what you want it to be. And if McAfee doesn't want to ask Belichick a tough question, who gives a shit? I applaud Pat McAfee. And I'm also insanely jealous of him. I want to be on every television in every airport in America, and I miss that.
Did ESPN, obviously the Chris Cody thing was a big sticking point, but did ESPN do a good job of giving the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gotts the freedom that you guys wanted?
I thought ESPN was great. Like, to their credit, we walked in there. They knew what kind of show they were getting. They left us alone for the most part. They really let us do our thing. Our thing was different than anything they had ever had. And so, yeah, they were great. They were great partners. They were fine. I mean, I didn't have to deal with some of the stuff that maybe Mike Ryan had to deal with on an executive level. I'm just telling you, my experience there was one that was great. I felt supported. The show felt supported. They were really good partners to us. And those platforms, man, they're massive. They really are. Like, they're massive. I still get recognized today all the time. And it's, you know, when I start to get now, when I walk through airports, is, hey, there's Stu Gotts from ESPN. I used to get that. Now I get, hey, there's Stu Gotts. What are you doing now? And so, yeah, it's like, listen, my dad can't find us on YouTube. When I told my dad, he's like, why'd you leave ESPN? I said, we're going to YouTube. We're going to DraftKings. He goes, do I have YouTube? I'm like, dad, we all have YouTube. What are you talking about? They can't find us. Like, there is something to popping up on a television every single day.
Yeah.
And being on a massive radio network with those four letters behind you. That was great. That made you feel like a big star. I miss some of that, but I also understand we're fortunate to be one of the shows that is able to sustain itself and really create jobs for other people and create a future and jobs for the people who have worked really hard for us. And that excites me, and I'm grateful for that.
Would it have been nice to have the Pat McAfee level of freedom, just from the standpoint of, like, maybe you had freedom of the content and the show that you were creating, but just not necessarily having to answer to bosses at ESPN.
Yeah, that would have been great. I mean, who wouldn't want what McAfee has? He's borrowing their platforms to grow his audience. They're borrowing him and his show and all those guests to help build audience on those platforms and to help generate sales. I think at least from my standpoint, that's something. Pat's doing it. We were employees of ESPN. I don't think people realize that, Brandon. Pat's not an employee of ESPN.
Right.
They are. It's they're partners. They're borrowing his show, and they know very well that Pat could leave at any moment and be fine on his own. They know that. We knew that when we were at ESPN that we could do that. There's only a handful of shows that could do that. We're one of them. I think the way McAfee has structured his deal is really, really smart. He's getting all the ESPN stuff. He's getting all the platforms. He's getting all the audience. He's getting all the guests. ESPN is getting a great program, but that's the way you do it, where you're partners and you're not an employee of ESPN. And I think you'll see more of that moving forward, where ESPN will, and the other sports media outlets, you'll see a bunch of partnerships moving forward. We were slightly behind that. Pat nailed it. And I wish that's the way we would have structured our deal, but we didn't, because we couldn't at the time. We were a local show that was hired by ESPN. We had no business being at ESPN. And yet they still hired us anyway. But that's the way to do it moving forward. Like, you don't have to work for anyone. Create a big, massive audience and a big, gigantic show, and see if someone like ESPN wants to partner with you. Like, Pat McAfee, well done, my friend.
Have you now sought to do anything like that with your show?
No,
you crave the live audience and, like, want to be on TV. Have you tried to?
I mean, we're on TV with the DraftKings network. You know, we have partners in DraftKings, and they have been great, and they have stayed away. In terms of staying away, I mean, they have let us do our show, for better or for worse. So no, we have I think 16 months left with DraftKings. I'm not certain where all that's at. I don't deal with any of that stuff. But we're super happy with them. And I believe they're super happy with us. I haven't thought about any of that stuff, to be quite honest with you. I just keep going in every day, doing our show and going home and play golf at like 2:30 or 3:00. And when the contracts are up, and I'll deal with what's next when it's next. But no, I haven't thought about any of that because I just assume that DraftKings is going, like, we'll be with DraftKings for a while.
Yeah.
You know?
Last thing, your book, Stu Gotz's personal record book.
My man.
Just got a release date.
Yeah.
How hard is it to write a book?
I'd be able to answer that if I wrote the book. I mean, I'm teasing. It's hard. I told Dan today, he was laughing at me, okay? I was like, man, writing a book's hard. A lot of meetings, a lot of decisions to make, a lot of decisions on things I don't care about, you know? Like, should this be the color of the cover? Should this trophy be there? Should this name be there? And I'm like, man, I don't care. Like, our listeners are going to buy up this book, and they have, and I appreciate that. It's really hard though. I will tell you what's made it easier is my partner, Dan Stanzik, who was a producer of mine at ESPN. To his credit, he would not let it go. He wanted this book written. He wanted to write the book. He said, and like, he listens to the show nonstop. So he said, Stugat, just do me a favor, voice all of these takes into a microphone and send them to me and I will write the book. So it is out now, stugatsbook.com. Please go purchase a copy. There was a lot of work put into it. And I will tell you, Brandon, the most gratifying thing about it was because I wanted people to write rebuttals. I basically gave them a blank sheet, a blank piece of paper to take a sledgehammer to my head, say whatever they want. And when I called, I didn't know if they were going to say yes. So I started, the first text I sent was to Mina Kimes asking her if she'd be willing to do this. And she responded inside of 2 minutes, yes, it would be an honor. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so cool. And then I went to Tim Kurchin. And then I went to Scott Van Pelt. And then I went to Jay Billis. And then I went to Andre Dawson, former NL MVP for the Cubs, because I wrote a chapter on him that if you finish in last place, you have no business winning the MVP. And every single person, Stan Van Gundy, every single person I sent a text to asking them, Mike Greenberg, to write a chapter, Mike Golick. Every person responded inside of 60 seconds saying, yes, it would be an honor. Thank you. Some variation of that. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? These people are going to write my fucking book for me. And they did. And it's going to be a New York Times bestseller. It's been great. And our audience is loving it and they're scooping it up. And I love the fact that I wrote a book before Dan Le Batard. I mean, what's better than that?
Yes, quite the accomplishment.
I left out Greg Cody. I have to be careful there. I can't. Greg Cody wrote a chapter. If I don't include Greg, he'll be very sensitive on Tuesday. Okay? But they did, and it was flattering. It was really cool. Like, imagine that.
Yeah.
And that's what ESPN did for us. Like, when you talk about those 8 years at ESPN, not only did we grow our audience, I made relationships and friends that I'll have for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So much so that when I asked them to help me write a book, they helped me write a book. And it's really cool. I'm flattered by it. I still can't believe they all said yes. I'm still waiting for Stephen A. Smith to respond to my text.
Awesome stuff. Congratulations on the book. And you were great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, man. You've been great to me. You've been great to the show. I know you love the show. Yeah. You have followed the show and covered the show very, very well. So I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. That is Stu Gotz. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.